Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief quality officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare Corporation.
Hey, everyone. I'm Brad Parsons. I'm a vice president of market operations for Baptist.
Well, guys, we are so excited about our guest today. Today, we have Dr. Sarah Womack. Sarah's life work has been to help organizations transform through culture. Sarah spent 8 years working inside Toyota, and today we're going to talk about one of mine and Brad's favorite subjects is the Toyota production system, the Toyota way. And in particular, we're going to talk about Sarah's new book, Toyota's Improvement Thinking from the Inside. But before we dive into Toyota and the book, Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Harvey. First of all, thank you for inviting me to your podcast. I love what you're doing, and I love that you're keeping this conversation going to a general audience and kind of putting it where the goats can get it, as we say, and making it relevant and fresh and renewed every day. So let's talk about a bit about my background. I started my personal transformation journey as a graduate student at the University of Michigan, studying under Jeff Leiker, who many people know in this space. Mm-hmm. And eventually, when I finished my PhD and defended my dissertation, and I had the chance to work at Toyota, I didn't know the extent to which being on the inside mattered, culture mattered. And what I was lacking to be successful within that organization. And so that was really the inspiration for the book itself, was to share with others that kind of nuance, that gray space between the technical things that you will pick up from books and actually living it, doing it every day, coaching it every day, leading it every day. So that's, and in terms of background prior to that, so mostly I do consulting. And of course, research, I will always be connected to research just because people need to know. Once I learn it and figure it out, I'm very generous. And I think it's part of my responsibility to share the knowledge and be in communities with others who are still etching towards that higher level thinking.
Well, Dr. Womack, we are certainly grateful to have you on and really appreciate. I think your book is going to be really fascinating for our listeners on connecting the dots. I want you to speak a little bit about the role of personal growth, how that shaped kind of your experience and also the book you've written.
I think personal growth should be at the forefront of every human being. You know, I'm a mother of three small kids, and personal growth is at the forefront every day with everything I do. And of course, professionally, you know, when you go pursue a terminal degree, it's with the desire to grow in a particular area more deeply, perhaps even more breadth. And so if you aren't inspired, let this be maybe one step closer to you getting inspired to personally grow and develop. Never stop learning, never stop pursuing challenges and trying to basically make your profession in the world a better place. So I think personal growth is absolutely key. It gives me purpose and others.
Sarah, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, you know, a misconception that I had when I started learning about continuous improvement and when I started studying Toyota, in that a lot of people, including me, they think that it's just a set of tools that you use, and that, it, you know, whether it's A3 thinking, whether or not it's Kata, PDSA or whatnot, but that is what the Toyota production system and the Toyota way is about. But that's a misconception. It's all about the people and all about the culture. Was that your experience when you went to Toyota?
So good question. Actually, it was the same thing for me. As a graduate student, it was about the tools. And this was prior to, so when I started, that was 2001 when I entered into the program. And so Toyota Way had not been written yet. So if you wanted a good book on Toyota, for example, you would do Taichi Ono's Toyota Production System. But the way it was written, it was very technical. It was hard to kind of think through and map it to mm-hmm. virtually any and every organization. Now, once you, so when I joined Toyota, I was very familiar with tools, for example, standardized work. You go, you do your time studies, you bring out certain and sundry tools to kind of get through that. And it didn't seem very different, or neither did it seem impactful. What was profound, however, and impactful about being on the inside, learning these tools and how they all kind of work together is, and I mentioned this in the book, these tools are really entry points for the real work of transformation. And when I say entry points, what I mean is, for example, you mentioned A3. So there's the thinking behind A3, which isn't a tool. And then there's the tool itself, which is physically an A11x17 document with this box and this box and this box. Now, the thinking behind it coincides with the tool itself as a way of communicating quickly general ideas, easily digestible ideas. And so the tools are absolutely key. I can't imagine an organization going through some sort of transformation without the physical tools. But it's the thinking behind it that is perhaps more important. That way you can change tools in and out. And I don't emphasize any tool over another, whether it's A3 or Kanban. If you go into Toyota, you will see these tools because they are very essential for them doing what they do and accomplishing the successes that they've had. They won't stop with tools, but it really is a matter of the thinking behind the tools. And the other thing I talk about in this transformation model in the book, this third piece, we mentioned tools. We mentioned the person's mindset and the thinking behind it. I call that spirituality and mindset. And then the third thing is the organizational values. So you mentioned culture. So it's the extent to which the organization itself as a whole embraces these key values that help lead and develop and ultimately lead to transformation.
Yeah, I've been in many A3 sessions with Brad here, and you may have a beautiful looking A3, and he's always going to ask you, tell me about your thinking behind all this. So that really resonates with me. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, no, I appreciate that. I love hearing about the tools as entry point. When I reflect on my experience, and really, I think the tools were my entry point as well. And again, I think we have to start by doing some of the tools, but then you learn over time what it's really about. And today I spend a ton of time wrestling with and considering how people think about the work. And so I love the conversation. And I want to go back to kind of a question I asked, Sarah, of personal growth. And it's really this, I'm holding back, trying to save us from the deep end a little bit, but this is really about kind of personal mindset and how you think about not only the work, but how you show up kind of to the job that you're tasked to do every day. And so my question is, how do you help people get to that understanding?
Sure. You have to have a desire to start with, you know, you have Great. To have the desire to be, you have to have that part of you who knows that even though I don't know the answer is out there. Even though I'm not where I want to be, there's hope that I will get to where I want to be. There has to be that peace. And that piece I talk about, it drives you to keep going, even in the face of adversity. And that's where perseverance shows up. So once you have that as a starting point, then when I coach leaders and virtually everyone in the organization, when I see that there is some level of, no, we're not there yet, but I will get there. That's where coaching, it becomes fun. It becomes rewarding. You can almost guarantee there are certain clients and people in organizations I work with that once I see something like that, I can almost guarantee a successful outcome. You can almost guarantee, and most people don't guarantee, even as a surgeon, you don't guarantee outcomes, do you?
Yeah.
Attorneys, they don't guarantee outcomes. I can almost guarantee outcomes when I see these basic elements within the person that shows up to be developed. And for my own personal growth, I can tell you one word that stands out, having been in Toyota, you almost have to have it to be successful, and that is humility. So humility is very much a key piece of the ways and means by which you're able to sit and really listen, not always having to speak. And these and they have cultural practices that come from Japan that you have to do it. It's non-negotiable. For you to be arrogant in a space of, you know, some of these Japanese gurus, it won't fit. You won't survive in the organization. You'll probably self-select out of the organization. But those who stay, that spirit of humility takes you and your personal growth and development a mighty, mighty long way. So did I kind of hit on your question about personal development and growth?
I love it. And you know, we have our Baptist management system, which is really built on a lot of thinking behind the Toyota production system and several models that we've kind of gleaned off of. But humility is one of the key principles that we talk about and pursue. It really fits for us as a faith-based, service-oriented organization. I love hearing that. And I think it will really resonate with a lot of our listeners that are Baptist leaders, but hopefully listeners all across the space.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Brad, I tried to not, I didn't get into it too deeply in the book. This idea of spirituality and all those, so Baptist is my tradition. That's my way of knowing. That's how I grew up. But it is broadly applicable, I believe. And I mentioned that whether, you know, there were people practicing Buddhist, anybody who has that inclination, that spiritual mindset, that there is greater. There's greater than who I am right now. There's greater out there. That's how you move the organization itself. A group of people who have that mindset can do mighty things. It doesn't have to be 100% of everyone in the organization, right? It could be like this remnant, this kind of quorum of people that once they get it, they can drive the organization, even those who don't necessarily believe. That's okay, and that's fine. You don't need everyone to believe all at once. But those folks are the ones who you know are going to work together to get it done, to continue to overcome those challenges and obstacles.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yes, Sarah, awesome. I was listening to you on the LEI podcast, and we're a faith-based organization, and you talked about Paul and his transformation, and you know, if it can happen to Paul, it can happen to anyone. But you mentioned a few minutes ago, you mentioned coaching, and I'd like you to unpack that, because I think that even in our organization, we don't do enough coaching, and I think a lot of organizations probably fall short in that aspect. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of coaching and how coaching is used in Toyota.
So in Toyota, coaching is key. It's foundational as a routine, as a practice, as an organizational structure. So we had a very lean structure in our group within Operations Management Development Division at Toyota. And so, for example, the ratio might be 1 to 3 at max, one supervisor for every 3 members that are supervised. And even on the shop floor, you'll see team leader, team member ratios very lean as well, 1 to 4, maybe 1 to 5. And that coaching piece, so let's take a standard activity, which is standardized work Kaizen. Everybody goes through it. You'll see all the books writing about people who are highly capable that come in. That's one of the first things you're going to do, because standardization is so key to the organization and the system itself. So you go in and you're trying to improve upon the standard that may already be very good, very lean, very tightly controlled. And in order to make that process better, or set of processes better, you almost have to have coaching, because the challenge starts at a very, with a steep incline. And those coaches are designed to keep you moving forward, where it's easy to start to stand still and to be overwhelmed at any given point in time. You have a lot of stimuli in, for example, a manufacturing environment. You have machines, you have people, you have parts, you have sounds, you're on a concrete floor. There are a lot of ways in which it can be like a forest, and those coaches are there to guide you in very specific ways. One, they're trying to keep you moving forward. So if you find in your organization, we've stalled, we're in the same place we were last year. That's where coaches come in and say, I've been where you are. I'm going to push you. That is my role, is to push you to the next level. And it's not that they always have the answers, but they are always designing things to keep you moving forward in your journey. And so what that practically meant, for example, you know, there was a tooling change that I needed, but I needed people to do it. Those people weren't available at the time. A coach, for example, would say, I'll show you where the tool shop is. Literally walked me over to the tool shop, showed me where the tools were, and I had to start fashioning the tools myself just to, again, to keep moving. So those coaches are designed, and that's how I do my work now. So as a coach now, I do the same thing. I keep people moving forward towards closing the gap, meeting the goal, overcoming the challenge. And without a coach, just like, for example, if you thought about if you've ever had a weight loss journey or struggled with weight, you know it's hard to do it by yourself. It's very difficult. Sometimes you just need the motivation. If you don't need a technical tool, or if there's not an intellectual challenge to overcome, there's just a will, a gap in your will, the coach is there to say, you know, I've been there. Let me encourage you. Let me do whatever it takes to get you moving to the next level and moving forward. So coaching is absolutely key. It could come in various and sundry ways. Again, it could be there's a technical gap, intellectual gap. There is a cultural gap. There is a will gap, a motivational gap. Maybe communication is horrible within your organization. If I identify that, then I'm coming with better communication techniques and skills to teach people how to work together to get to the end that they want. And that also requires coaching too.
I really love and agree that this is a journey. And I think helping look at it as a journey that we're kind of always on and always improving is helpful for me, but it can also be frustrating. And in reality of organizations with real needs and kind of real goals and real kind of improvement kind of thresholds, in order to get results for our patients and their families, but we are in the business of getting results in an organization. How do you marry or think about the journey aspect of kind of continually looking for improvements to the need of real finite calendars and even goals for when things need to be accomplished?
I think to always put the patient's needs or the customer needs first is absolutely key. So let's say it is very clear within this organization that we do put our patients first or our customers first, our stakeholders, not necessarily all stakeholders, but patients and customers first. It could be students if we're talking about education, for example. But when you put them first, you'll see, based on your environment and how competitive it is or it isn't, there's always opportunity for improvement. So in Toyota, for example, you might hear a lot of comparisons. Well, our Japanese sister plant does it this way, and this is their output and performance. Some people are naturally competitive, so they'll always want to meet the challenge. Some people aren't. And for those, you still can put very challenging targets in front of them. And once again, you still have to coach them to close the gap and close the targets. But I think it is important to have a healthy level of competition within the organization, across within the industry, that you are benchmarking, you are looking at organizations and saying, no, if we put the customers first, we should be doing at least what this other organization can do. And I think Toyota does that, and that's pretty much how their journey started. They were comparing themselves to other automotive organizations to say, no, we can do better. And the means by which we will do better is X, Y, Z, or the principles are X, Y, and Z. And so putting that healthy dose of competition in the mix can produce good outcomes as well.
Sarah, Skip and I were talking on our drive in this morning, and, you know, we were thinking about, you know, a fish doesn't even realize that it's in water. Now, within the Toyota organization, if you walked up to your average employee, would they be able to articulate, you know, the Toyota way or the Toyota production system, or has it just become so ingrained that it's happening without even realizing it? How intentional does Toyota have to be and to make sure that this culture continues?
Extremely intentional. And they don't, I can promise you, even not having spoken to the TMC Japan folks, Toyota Motor Company Japan, they know, because they've been, a lot of them have the memory that we weren't always where we are now. Mm. They have that memory. It's still living. And so even though they may be at the top, they still know that they can easily lose their place if they don't continue to work towards continuous improvement. And so individuals who come within the organization, you know as well, because it is not run like a typical American organization. You know it's different, because if you have worked before, it doesn't match any of those corporate or organizational experiences. It is very intentional. There's an intentional effort in keeping their culture moving, and it's not static. They always want, for example, non-Japanese plants to continue to move forward to catch even the Japanese plants. There's still a big gap between the Japanese performance levels and non-Japanese performance levels. And so they know the importance of keeping the traditions going. And when you're inside the company for a long time, I have heard actually people say that it's hard to talk to someone who works in the Toyota production system because it's normal to them. They don't pick up on the nuance, the things that they do on a daily basis that others don't do. And I imagine that is true if you've been there for some length of time. But if you're new, you know. And it is very clear and very different, those cultural ways that don't match other American organizations. And I believe they will continue to grow in that way. I hope the company will continue to grow in that way by keeping that kind of Japanese tradition and spirit going. And they do so by sending very talented people from Toyota to these abroad to keep developing, coaching, and advising those who are within the organization. So as far as the pond goes, even within the pond, if you ask a typical member, they'll just tell you what they do, and it's always like that. They can slack off at any given point in time, because it's not always natural to be disciplined. It's not always natural to keep working hard. And so there are ways in which, you know, day to day, they do slack off, and they'll get reminded. Toyota every now and then will do these themes. One theme might be going back to the basics. We've lost our way in standardization. Let's go back to the basics. Mm. And so they'll be very intentional about going back to the basics to regain their focus on those core principles as it relates to continuous improvement.
Sarah, I want to go kind of back, maybe even macro, like what, and it might've been some of these elements that you're talking about, but what was the motivation for writing a book?
The motivation for writing a book is all the things I thought I knew going into the organization and things that would make me successful, and they absolutely did not. I did not know the extent to which people development, this goes back to your development question, was such a key piece. So even if I came in with some level of skill and capability, their responsibility was to make me go to the next level. And so to do that, the tasks would become more challenging. And then I was responsible for closing that gap, for achieving it. So let's say I was able to make an improvement that resulted in a 5% gain. The next time I would either have less time to do it, or the gain would have to be larger than the previous time. And so they're constantly finding ways to develop people, to make improvement, to develop their thinking. And you don't know that coming in. You just think, oh, expertise or mastery of the tools themselves. You know, I can implement Kanban. I can do the calculations. I can write in A3. I could do standardized work charts. So you think coming in that that is the end state, but no, like I said before, that's just the entry point to get you to a more developed state.
Sarah, you mentioned the gap between the performance in the Japanese plants and maybe the American plants.
Sure.
Talk to us. You know, I've never been to Japan, but I realize that the culture is very, very different than the American culture. And talk to us about the barriers of our culture in implementing these principles. Or is there a barrier? Is that a misconception? Does that question make sense?
It does. And I think there are, for sure, Japanese ways that, culturally speaking, as the country, that are very different. And those ways show up in the way Toyota does business practices, like this idea of respect, the idea of leaders and what their role could be. So, for example, you may know the story of Keiichiro Toyota, who we're talking back in the 50s now, in Japan, he was running the company, and they had it was an economic downturn, and they had problems within the company with the union. And then ultimately they had to let a lot of the workforce go. Well, he left as a sign and a signal of, this is my responsibility as the leader, having to lay off all these members that I must go to. That is not what you would see in a typical kind of American way of thinking. You know, the way leaders think about work and leading organizations, they are in some cases fundamentally different. The idea that you want a single hero is very much what you're taught from early mm-hmm. ages in America. And it's not that they don't believe in heroes. It's just more of a collective spirit there that does lend itself organizationally to this system, this Toyota production system, and the idea that if we're going to improve as a team, we have to do it together. We don't need a hero. We need everyone kind of working together towards the end. There are a lot of classes that are taught. When they teach lean, you'll see an image of a boat, a crew team rowing a boat. And it's not about one individual performer outperforming everyone else. That won't get you to your destination. It's us being in sync, paced well, and understanding where our competition is that gets us to the end point. So I think that image really resonates with, culturally speaking, the differences between the two, that ultimately lends itself to Toyota's performance improvements.
I think that's right. I think I've used the rowing example before, and it really resonates. Also, your comment about heroes. I mean, we culturally, even though we know better, we still recognize the heroes that or the firefighters, and really for sustainable results, it's almost the opposite that we need. It's really understanding the benefit of every single team member and the value that they bring. And so I think, again, it's very much on point. You know, Sarah, how do we, and again, a very practical, like you talked about when you're coaching, you kind of know it and you kind of know how you can almost guarantee that you're going to get results based on what you see. If you go into an organization and you and you don't see that, how do you coach leaders to understand what they need to do differently?
I'm going back to my comment on competition. So if you have, for example, five potential leaders to coach, and you can't give everyone the same time, it never, almost never works out that way. And so you can spend more time on those you think have the most promise and capability. You get their buy-in, you get results there, and then hopefully that spirit of competition emerges where others see and they look across the aisle and they say, I'd like to get to that level too. So you can start in TSSC specifically within Toyota, Toyota Supplier Support Center, or Toyota Production Support Center, now it's called. They usually go what they call inch wide and then mile deep. So you use that leader to go inch wide, mile deep, develop, get the results, let everyone else in the organization go and see. These are the changes we made. These are the cultural changes. These are all the different ways in which we've improved our performance. And then you can get the buy-in of others. And that's generally how change management works anyway. You have to show it with those you know are going to keep pushing forward. And sometimes it's the squeakiest wheel that gives you a thorn in your side that winds up being the biggest believer and advocate, like Paul. We mentioned Paul the Apostle.
I love the Paul analogy.
That's right. Sometimes it's that person who is the most antithesis that winds up being your biggest champion in the end and taking you to the higher heights.
Well, Sarah, this has been delightful and a pleasure. I mean, we could sit here and chat all day. But unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up. But once again, on behalf of Baptist, we just want to thank you for being our guest. And for our listeners, Sarah's book is Toyota's Improvement Thinking from the Inside. You can get it on Amazon or any place that you get your books. And once again, Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.